You're listening to Cross Currents from KLW News. I'm Hannah Baba. California has seen some notorious serial killers over the years. The Zodiac Killer, the Grim Sleeper, the Hillside Strangler. But the Golden State Killer might be the most terrifying. Beginning in the late 70s, he raped an estimated 50 women and killed at least 12 people throughout the state. Then the gruesome murders came to a halt in 1986. The killer vanished and the case went cold. Until now. Police arrested a suspect at his home in a Sacramento suburb last week. Now, we usually don't talk about serial killers here on Cross Currents, but the way this case was solved brings up some interesting questions about privacy and how police investigate rape cases. And joining me now to discuss this is KLW's justice reporter, Holly J. McDeed. So, Holly, after 40 plus years, Sacramento investigators believe they found the murderer. For people who did not live through this crime spree, tell us about it. What was it like?
So if you weren't there, it's hard to grasp how truly terrifying it was. Starting in 1976, there would be a new rape reported in the Sacramento area, sometimes weeks or even days apart, sometimes in the same neighborhood. The crimes were known to involve a man in a ski mask, breaking into homes during the night, tying up the husbands and raping the wives. Gun sales spiked. The Golden State Killer went on to rape and murder all over California. So people lived in fear, and some victims still do, and police just could not catch him.
So why did the police keep up the search for so long?
So over the years, a core group of people who called themselves citizen sleuths kept the pressure up. The most prominent was the late writer Michelle McNamara, who wrote I'll Be Gone in the Dark about the killer. McNamara pored over police reports, interviewed victims and family members, and chased details about the crime with other armchair detectives online until she died 2 years ago. She even gave the suspect his name, the Golden State Killer. So when they finally found him, even police admitted McNamara's best-selling book kept interest up and tips coming in.
Mm-hmm. So did police take the online detectives, these sleuths, did they take them seriously?
Well, it helped also that Sacramento's district attorney, Anne Marie Schubert, also really wanted to put this terrible mystery to rest. She grew up close to some of the crimes. She says her dad bought a firearm and her mother kept an ice pick under her pillow, scared they would be next. So 2 years ago, the DA successfully lobbied for a statewide task force to find the Golden State Killer. The FBI also launched a national pricey media campaign, hoping someone would come forward. People had always wondered if the killer lived in Sacramento amongst them. And there he was when they found him last week, living with his daughter and granddaughter in the sleepy Sacramento suburb of Citrus Heights. Now that police have arrested a suspect, some of the victims say they can finally sleep at night.
So tell us about the suspect that police arrested last week. Who is he?
His name is Joseph James D'Angelo. He's 72 years old. He served in the Navy during Vietnam. He was a police officer in the tiny Central Valley town of Exeter, then in Auburn, until he was fired there for shoplifting. Investigators believe he was still a cop when he began raping women. As for a motive, investigators say the East Area rapist once yelled, "I hate you, Bonnie, I hate you," while raping a victim. So police believe Bonnie is the rapist's ex-fiance and he committed the crimes seeking vengeance.
Oh, goodness. So how did he finally get caught? And what does all this have to do with privacy?
So he was caught thanks to a combination of DNA and a free open source ancestry website. Investigators used DNA from the crime scene and plugged the suspect's genetic profile into a free online gene database called GEDmatch. It's a kind of site people usually use when they want to learn more about their ancestors. So the search that led police to the killer's distant relative, and soon the pool of suspects eventually shrank to a single family. So police kind of wandered around the family tree, and keeping in mind what they knew about the suspect's age and his likely whereabouts, they were able to identify a suspect. They staked out his home and collected discarded items containing his DNA until they found their match.
So can law enforcement just go through and search through genealogy websites and get a hold of anyone's DNA?
Not always. Other sites like 23andMe and Ancestry.com require a court order for law enforcement to access DNA files stored in their databases. But GEDmatch doesn't have those kinds of privacy protections. So it's like once your brother or distant aunt uploads DNA online, police can trace genetic lines to you. You can't control what family members are putting up online. So this is kind of an unregulated world right now. And there can be false hits. In 2014, a search through a gene website led police working on a cold case to a man in New Orleans who turned out to be innocent.
Holly, what are some of the lessons from this case for law enforcement?
Some lawmakers are saying this case shows why we need to get DNA from all rape kits tested. So the Golden State Killer, he's never going to go to trial for the rapes he committed because the statute of limitations has expired. So in most rape cases, for that very reason, investigators usually throw out the DNA evidence. So after the suspect was found, people like Alameda County DA Nancy O'Malley said if this case doesn't prove that we should test every rape kit, no matter how old, then no other case will. It's also really personal for her. She remembers taking calls from women raped by the Golden State Killer while she was a volunteer with a rape crisis hotline. So now, decades later, the suspect is caught and she's championing a bill that's in the state Senate right now that would require California law enforcement agencies to test all rape kits. Right now, that testing is voluntary and some police agencies have said they don't have the resources to get through the backlog.
So as for this case, what happens now? What happens next?
So the suspect appeared in court for the first time on Friday. He was handcuffed in a wheelchair, his eyes barely open, and he did not enter a plea. Right now, the next court date is set for May 14th.